No more Pac-12 or NCAA sports for the rest of the 2019-2020 year. But did the NCAA get it right by adding extra eligibility for players? And rate your level of unhappiness without sports right now. They also have suspended on and off campus recruiting till April 15th. Who benefits from that? New commits are coming out. Mike Leach gets blasted by a player. U of A hires new people. And we have a challenge for you Pac-12 Apostles listeners. And of course, we got the fast food draft. You're going to be excited about that. I'm George Reister with Ralph Amsden, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time, appreciate your energy, and appreciate your support. Make sure you share with a friend and leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. And please make sure, of course, share with a friend. Now let's get to it. Ralph, how is life under not full quarantine, but self-isolation, not with groups of 250, not with 50, but down to groups of 10 people? How are you living?
Well, I'm getting close to the limit. If they bump that down to 5, I think we're both in trouble, George.
I have 7 people, 7 between just me, my wife, and kids. That's 7 of us.
Yeah.
So if you add anybody else, oh, and then my wife's cousin, she lives with us as well. That's 8 people. So we can't even have anybody over. Period.
Yeah, we got. Well, first of all, I don't think that I'm doing my wife a disservice by talking about her here, but she has kind of one of those jobs at one of these companies where she's the one that like makes the decisions on how to do things once everything is sort of shut down. She's like an operations director for a company with thousands of employees. So she's had a pretty busy weekend. And she also like does music at churches and everything. So she had one, you know, churches aren't gathering. So she had one thing free up, and then it's up to her to figure out the logistics to how like everybody works from home and all that stuff at her other job. So she has a million things to do. I cover sports. And so my calendar is so blank. Like the only ink on my calendar is what I wrote to the actual days in on my whiteboard. So I got nothing going on. So it's kind of on me. I homeschool 2 of my 4 kids anyway. And so it's just, you know, bring the other kids into the mix. And so it doesn't feel too different yet. But my wife is home and super busy, and it's been pretty fun to watch her, you know, in business mode. 'Cause I don't really get to see it that often. We're going to be all right. I'm kind of a disaster minded person. I was telling you when we were talking on the phone the other day, I always am thinking about the worst case scenario, and usually that's like a psychological issue. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not like an overly paranoid person, but I'll be honest. Like if I put 2 pieces of bread in the toaster, my first thought is, man, what if the toaster explodes? Like, what would I do then? You know, I'm always thinking of like the worst case scenario. And so, you know, when I started hearing about this virus and everything like that, I was like, well, what if they shut everything down and we were all just had to kind of chill at home and do a huge reset on society? And then slowly watching that come true has been like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm justified in thinking like this a little bit. So I'm finally feel like I'm not crazy. That's how I feel. But at the same time, it has been kind of wild to watch some other people who maybe weren't prepared for something like this to happen deal with this kind of stress for the very first time. And I'm concerned for humanity. Just watching people out at the grocery store. And I was on the phone with you when you were driving through the Costco parking lot the other day. That seemed like quite a task.
Oh, dude, it was a zoo. And okay, so I had never envisioned a world where Costco would be out of stuff. Like that just didn't even cross my mind that were even possible. It's just tough, man. And I think we have talked about this for a while. I knew that where we were at was coming because I've talked to so many people. Oh, it's just the flu. It's just this. It's just that. And I knew that where we're at now and where we're going, which is probably a full quarantine, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. But I hoped in my mind, I did not envision a world without sports until Rudy Gobert came out when we found out that he had the coronavirus. And that was what the day before the Pac-12 tournament was. Well, the Pac-12 tournament had started that day on that Tuesday. And the next day, the teams with the byes were supposed to start playing. So I thought, okay, cool. They'll just play without fans. And then once the NBA canceled, I was like, oh, everything's done. There will be no more sports played.
And that happened the same time as Tom Hanks announced that he tested positive. And Tom Hanks, I mean, I feel like is the most, if not the most famous celebrity in America. He's top five. In my opinion. I mean, just because his career has spanned 40 years and it's in kids movies as well as like comedies. And I think he's like currently relevant, has always been so. It would be like
I would say Brad famous, Pitt or but Meryl not necessarily Street. As popular.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Toy Story. What did Toy Story 4 do at the box office? That might be like the last blockbuster movie if we never get movie theaters back.
well, his voice. But of course, I mean, you'll remember his voice. The kids will remember his voice. They may not remember him. His face, but all of us older people will for sure remember it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, but that's who has like the purchasing power and the decision making power, right? It's adults, so it's probably everybody like 25 and up. And to everybody 25 and up, Tom Hanks, like he just was in the Mr. Rogers movie. He was just in Toy Story 4. Like he has been like box office gold our entire
since like Big. Lives. I mean, yeah. Everything. The man has been in so many movies that we know, love, and enjoy, and consider some of the greatest movies of all time. Forrest Gump. I mean, he's played legendary characters, but yeah. So, but no sports. What is your level of unhappiness without sports right now, Ralph?
I mean, I don't know. I kind of welcome the reset. I think that this is going to be really, really rough for people who are kind of covering beats. It's going to be rough for quite a few friends of ours who make a living doing this. And so my mind is kind of with them. When I think about, you know, what my level of satisfaction is or isn't, I immediately shift into, you know, there are so many cottage industries built up on the mega industry of sports, especially in content creation. You know, this is most of the people that I associate with in my daily life. And so, you know, I kind of worry for them. But I mean, as far as just like a season of no sports consumption, I look at it. For me personally, it's just an opportunity. You know what I always think about, like, you know, my calendar gets full of like all the different games that are being played, all the different deadlines, all the different, you know, recruiting is this now, recruiting is in that season now. You know, the NFL calendar year started today and all those things that I kind of just look at it as an opportunity for a reset and a refresh and to check in on some people. So I think it'll be a while before I really feel sort of the antsiness and the cravings to just turn on a game and check out. Not that we can really even do that because, you know, we create content based off of what we consume. So we're never really watching sports just to relax. I think that craving has sort of been beat out of me over time of just doing the job that I do. I'm okay. I'm going to be all right for a while just because I think this is a really cool opportunity to just touch base with a bunch of people that maybe you haven't, get to some things that were maybe shuffled down your to-do list, you know, look my kids in the eyes, check in with them, see how they're doing. And you know, get on the phone with you every time, you know, something breaks. And just, I don't know. I see so many opportunities out there to do valuable things that I'm not super worried about sports being gone. But I tell you what, if I can't get out and watch a high school track meet in the next 3 or 4 months, just get out on the grass, you know, be around like live sports. That's I think what's going to do me in, is being out there among people, the sights, the smells, the sounds, all that. You know, that's just become part of my daily routine, and I don't know how long I can go without being out at an event.
Dude, that's the hard part. And for me, it's not even so much necessarily the actual events for other people. It's the events for my family. Like, I miss going to my kids' games.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
I miss going to practice. Like that gives me so much enjoyment that being gone, it really, really hurts my heart a little bit.
And you were going to most of these California CIF basketball championship playoff games, right? Like you were super excited about that.
Dude, I saw one of the greatest high school games of all time that I've ever seen in my entire life. Sierra Canyon versus Etiwanda. I hope they replay it somewhere. I mean, it is part of that NFHS like package where you can watch it from anywhere, the high school streaming sports. But I hope they put it on FS1 or something. That was incredible. One of the greatest high school games I've ever seen. But my son, who works out at some of these gyms with other pro players and all of this stuff, he's like, "Dad, can I go work out at the gym?" I'm like, "Oh, son, not right now. We got it." So I've turned a garage into a workout facility. I've turned one of my garages, and I'm actually considering getting a Peloton at this point.
Hey, have you seen all these people? Because, you know, you're around your kids a lot. I'm around my kids a whole lot. Have you seen all these people tweeting some variation of like 30 minutes into homeschooling my kids, teachers need to be paid $1 million a year? Do you think people are going to start to kind of realize what it is that teachers do all day with their children?
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to get some new appreciation finally.
Yes. I mean, and it happens just every summer, their kids. Right?
People are happy to kick their kids out of the car on the first day of school when August or September rolls around. But I think that this is going to be, you know, with teachers actually sending the material home for the parents to go through, you're going to learn some things about your kid and how they learn and what they retain. I think we're going to build up some sympathy for a few different professions here. One of which I hope is the people who check out and bag your groceries at the store, because they are getting their asses kicked right now.
Yes, dude. They're like, "Yo, I checked out," and the lady was like, "Yo, I've been bagging groceries for 8 hours straight. I barely even had time to pee." I was like, "Good God, dude." And these grocery stores, they're excited because people are hoarding food and supplies. So for the first time probably ever, a lot of these chains, because a lot of them are new, I know that things have happened before in life, they have raided the stores and hoarded everything, where you have Costco shelves bare. Costco shelves. I went to a Costco. Dude, the only thing, they had removed the pallets off the floor. That's how bare some of these aisles were. But the NCAA has made things bare as well, with no sports, no recruiting on and off campus. But the NCAA, now, they did the right thing, supposedly, in extending eligibility for seniors if they want to come back for spring sports. That does not include basketball. That does not include, well, men's and women's basketball. We're talking about baseball, softball, lacrosse, track and field, these athletes who won't get to compete at all. What do you think about that, Ralph? Because I'm pessimistic, because even though it was the right thing to do, the NCAA still has an opportunity to screw this up royally.
Yeah, I think because it's unprecedented, I'm trying to extend some grace. My hope is that they look the other way on a whole bunch of stuff and just make sure that the people who want to come back can come back, that they raise the scholarship limit accordingly. This is going to have longstanding effect. This is a major moment in American history. And I think that we're going to see just how agile the NCAA can be. And I think we're also going to find out just how meaningless some of the restrictions that they had in place were in the first place. You know, they haven't needed to bend on a lot of the things that they deal with up until this point. This is going to force them to be more agile. And then I think once we all have the realization that the NCAA has the agility to make some of these changes on the fly because they had to, then I think the expectations of what the NCAA is and does in other situations that require a little bit of understanding and grace, like players moving to be closer to home, you know, but not getting their, not getting automatic eligibility, while somebody else who just got beat out and wants a chance to start and transfer somewhere else does get immediate eligibility. I think that we're going to see the NCAA unable to make excuses for some of these decisions moving forward. But
yeah, you made a decision on this eligibility thing super quick, but it takes you a long time to figure out about one-time transfers. It takes you years to figure out about that.
Well, backup offensive lineman for the last few years for Arizona State, Cade Cote, he just got, you know, I think it took like 3 months. It went well into spring practice of getting a sixth year of eligibility for him when he, you know, he broke his foot and missed most of his, what would have been his senior year. You know, that individual case takes over 3 months to figure out, you know, what they're going to do. And he has to kind of stand on the sideline at spring practices and wonder what his fate will be, you know, and then if he's in school, is he on scholarship or not? The whole thing is just super weird. And then, you know, this goes down and they're all able to immediately say, hey, if you play spring sports in the 2020 season, you know, then you're good to come back. And I think some of this is just going to become like, oh, I don't know. It's just, it's tricky. You know, I'm not one of the people that comes out and says, you know, I am kind of anti-authority and I push back on Larry Scott and the Pac-12 a lot, but I think the NCAA does have a tough job and there are a lot of people that work for the NCAA and a lot of them have good intentions. And I met and interviewed a couple of people who are part of the rules committee and do other things for the NCAA and they're not out to ruin anybody's day or anything like that. But they're just big.
I would disagree at times.
I think a lot of the people in NCAA are just kind of low level employees. They're not sitting in some dark cave,
yeah.
You know, trying to hatch up ways to screw things up. I think Mark Emmert deserves every bit of criticism he's ever received as the face of that organization. But a lot of the times it's just a bunch of low level people sitting in a room dealing with the restrictions that they were kind of given that are very detached from the situation altogether. And then the NCAA as an organization ends up taking the blowback for it and absorbing it. And Mark Emmert has pretty much shown that he's got the tolerance to deal with all of the blowback and the nonsense. And so,
yep.
You know, I don't know. I think that they will show that they have agility that they didn't know that they had before. And I hope that positively affects them moving forward.
I don't have any hope that they will do the right thing on because they've proven that they will get stuff halfway right and then screw it up or screw it up entirely, because this coronavirus is going to bring up some eligibility questions like we already said. So if they don't increase the scholarship limits properly, commensurate with the number of players who come back, that is going to be disastrous for high school recruits who deserve athletic scholarships, but then can't get them because the school is under a scholarship restriction.
We're going to be dealing with baseball too. Baseball is already weird.
Like, yeah, they have 11.7 scholarships for 35 guys.
Yeah, I never understood that. That is bizarre. anyway. And so now you're going to run into situations where guys who were juniors who were hoping to get drafted either don't, or the guesswork is just really, really shoddy by all these Major League Baseball teams trying to figure out their rosters. So you'll have people coming back, which will stifle the sophomores and freshmen underneath them. It could.
Who would have gone on full scholarship, because on baseball teams, there's only like three, maybe four guys who are on full scholarship, and those are your studs.
And you might have a guy that's a 30th round pick out of high school decide that the college that he was going to go to all of a sudden is getting two or three seniors back that they weren't going to get back because they were leaving after their junior year. And that high school kid might go rough it in the minors instead of going to college. It's going to affect people's trajectories for their entire baseball career.
Yep. And the other thing where the NCAA can screw it up is schools are closed, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that people have really factored in this. So like my daughter's school, LMU, is closed. Kids got to get out of the dorms and everything. What if you are a kid who was like me? I went to college. Family wasn't in a great financial position. They moved because I didn't need a room anymore. They downsized. So now where do I go if I'm out of school and I can't stay in the dorms, or I can't or I have to move out of my campus living or something? Where do I go? Because there are a lot of low income families like that were in a much worse situation than my family was, because we still had a place to live. My family was able to come up to games. They drove up all the time. We didn't have money, but we weren't. Like we were broke. We weren't poor.
And you're wondering if somebody accepting what is essentially charity could be misconstrued as illegal benefits.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now this player ends up suspended, got to pay money back. Oh, because we couldn't eat for corona. Like, what do you, because remember, part of being quarantined is you actually need disposable income to buy groceries with restaurants closed, or you're going to be spending way more money ordering takeout. So if you can't cook or don't have disposable income to stock up on resources, you are screwed. Like you, Ralph, you have a ton of supplies at home. I because a prepper gave them to you.
Yeah. So my uncle is my best friend in the world. He's 73-year-old Vietnam veteran. He was the best man at my wedding. He's a good dude, but he was living down here by himself in Casa Grande, Arizona. He's about 45 minutes from me, and I was checking in on him every day, but he got kind of bored and wanted to move in with his daughter and son-in-law in Southern Colorado. And he sold his house, but they told him, like, hey, in order for this deal to go through, the people that want to move in within 2 weeks. And so I had to go over there and help him pack up all his stuff in 2 weeks. And he's kind of a paranoid guy. He's kind of a doomsday prepper, and he couldn't fit it all in the U-Haul. So I had to move all of his things into my garage. And so before any of this coronavirus, before I even heard the word coronavirus, I had a garage full of like three pallets of wax beans and ramen and powdered milk and all this and tomato sauce. And so it looked like I was prepping for some kind of disaster, and then the disaster came. And so I have about 2 years worth of cleaning supplies and a bunch of canned vegetables to hold me over. So I'm good. and you wonder, you know, I went to Arizona State University. If I hear that one of these kids needs food, you know, if I turn around and I give them one of these pallets of wax beans, is that an NCAA violation, you know?
Yeah, and that's one of those things, is I'm not going to let anybody starve. And so I'm not snitching. I'm not telling, whatever it is. What did you think about on and off campus recruiting being suspended until 2015? But that clearly doesn't stop the phone calls.
Yeah.
Because Ty Thompson just committed to Oregon, the quarterback.
Yeah, so first, Ty Thompson is somebody out in Arizona who I've gotten a chance to get to know, and have also watched him play quite a bit. He's a big kid. He's physically really well developed, huge broad shoulders. He was 6'4" going into his sophomore year of high school, and he's just sort of, his body's just sort of filled out. He looks like a college player right now. He's very fundamentally sound, makes good throws, and he lifted his team to a 4A state championship last year when they probably had no business even being there. He's the biggest guy on the field, including his offensive line. And so he's definitely a really, really special football player. I think that's a really great pickup for Oregon, and we're going to try to get him on the show, maybe even this show, because, you know, I'm sure he's not, doesn't have much going on. I'll give him a call and see if we can't record an interview with him. But the thing that my mind automatically shifted to, and I ran this by you, and you were kind of in the same boat, is, and I hate saying it, but this may benefit the Pac-12 as far as the dam has just been broken and all of our best players are headed to the SEC, ACC, Big Ten, all over the country. But people in the Pac-12 footprint might want to stay a little bit closer to home now that their parents realize that a disaster like the current situation that we're facing is much more difficult when your kid is out at Rutgers or your kid is out at the University of Virginia and you live in Southern California, you know? And so there's that element to it. And then I think you brought something up of, could it actually hurt some of the schools that are recruiting in major metropolitan areas where there was a little bit of an outbreak or where the outbreak originated from?
Like Seattle.
It's weird to be saying that, but it's possible.
Yeah, you have Seattle that may be, you know, that's been heavily affected. The negative recruiting that can go into that, hey, yo, man, it rains out there. You might catch corona, you know. you are probably, you know, I can see a Dante Williams saying that down at USC.
Yeah, I could see that happening too. He's not going to listen to this. He's blocked me on Twitter. So
it's funny. The things I hear from other Pac-12 coaches about this dude is very interesting.
He's a good recruiter. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Because we don't want to blow up anybody else's spot, but other coaches in the Pac-12. Even coaches on staff that he's been on, they give you that, you know, he does a really good job recruiting.
Yeah, right.
That's what they tell you. So moving on to the next thing, Arizona hires the recruiting thing, I agree with you. That they are going to, that it could help the Pac-12 schools, could be a big deal, could be good for the conference generally all the way around. So, but we shall see. What did you, you were the one who brought this up to me about Mike Leach's comments from Andre Dillard, the kid, he was drafted in the first round last year, right?
I believe,
or either the first or second round last year, and about Mike Leach moving on from the Cougars to go to Mississippi State. Dillard said, "I had no idea that he would leave. He struck me as a guy who hated change, but you could tell by the offense he ran. But I was really happy to hear the news because the boys back there needed a change. Mike Leach isn't exactly a coach that you'd like to play for. He's just one of those guys who gets results. But the way he gets results is frowned upon by the players. He never gave off any vibe that he cared about his players on a personal level. Playing for him felt like a bit of a dictatorship. It personally bothered me. What kind of coach throws his entire team under the bus when things go wrong? But he never put any blame on himself. Calling out players, calling them fat, slow, and says he needs new players. He did that several times when I was there. It just wasn't good leadership. He compared us to a junior college women's softball team. I was like, dude, you need to chill out. The guys were offended by that. Anyway, I'm just happy to see he's moved on, but I do appreciate him giving me the opportunity to play there at WSU.
Okay, so I
feel... There's so many things to unpack right here.
Number one, though, I feel vindicated. Because we did have some people reach out to us and say, like, hey, the players aren't soft like you guys when you say Mike Leach never took responsibility for anything and he was very quick to always throw his players under the bus. They've never complained, so you don't need to complain for them, right? Those are some of the comments that I heard every time we talked about the fact that Mike Leach had an ownership issue, right? Like, that he was just really quick to blame others. And so I heard that probably a minimum of a dozen times from people. Like, you don't need to be offended on behalf of the players. But here is Andre Dillard, number 22 pick of the 2019 NFL draft, who was around Mike Leach for 5 seasons, mm-hmm. saying Mike Leach, quote, never put any blame on himself, calling them fat and slow and saying he needs new players. He did that several times when I was there. It just wasn't good leadership, unquote. So you and I only talked about the couple of times that he did it in public. That means he's looking this team in the eye and telling them they're a junior college women's softball team. Which, against women's softball, but like JUCO? Come on now.
At least give them like Alabama, UCLA, you know what I mean? Like a championship level team. Dude, it was, and we have been blasting him because with the last year, with the whole get off of social media thing, but then he's the one randomly tweeting about things about California that he's got nothing to do with him, about California's homelessness. And like, you're like, bro, like, you're such a hypocrite. And he's a really good football coach. He is. But he's like a, like, players, coaches, granted, you don't have to be touchy-feely with all your players. However, when you coach college players as opposed to pro players, and pro players even respond differently too. Because think about it, your job. If you feel like the company that you work for cares about you as a person, or even has your interest at heart at all, like, it cares about you, you're willing to go to more bat for the team and be more loyal to the company. Same thing with your boss. If you feel like they genuinely care about you, you might be like, F the company, but I love my boss. He a good dude.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. And there's also like, there's the side of like negging the people that work for you. You know, there's ways to do it. There's levels to it, right? You tell them like, hey, nobody expects us to be here. Nobody expects us to compete with the big dogs, you know? And when you're saying something like that, you're acknowledging the reputation that you have, but you're not acknowledging the reality that means that's destiny, that talent is destiny, right? You're saying nobody expects us to be here. So anything good we do from here on out, it's all gravy. Right. And then there's the other way of doing it, of that Mike Leach did, of ripping a member of the media and saying, like, why do you think we always lose to Washington? Look at the recruiting rankings, you know, where you do say that talent is destiny, right? Where you do say that ultimately my guys are never going to be able to overcome because University of Washington just gets better players. That has to be so frustrating if you're playing for Mike Leach, to for him to constantly reveal how he feels about your level of talent. And then the ultimate admission that Mike Leach didn't think these guys were good enough was to jump to a middling SEC program where he believes that the talent is just so much more naturally elevated from the baseline players that he'll be getting, that, you know,
middling? Man, until they had the coach from Florida, Mississippi State have been garbage, dude. They're not a middling SEC program. They are a bottom tier. It's probably... From SEC people who cover the SEC, they'll tell you that Mississippi State, the only job potentially worse in the SEC is at Arkansas, maybe. Because at least Missouri, you're kind of away from everybody else. You got Kansas, Missouri. They got good players coming out of there. You got at Vanderbilt, you don't really have too high expectations because it's an academic school. They don't win. They did win Franklin when James Franklin was there, but that has been kind of about it. And now you're looking at Mississippi State. They feel like they should be good, but always at Ole Miss's shadow. They can't be that. Dude, this is – he just took a job that is the Washington State of the SEC. Yes, he's got better talent, but he's playing in, against more talent too.
I mean, but so that's my question. Is he left Washington State where the players were junior college women's softball caliber level, and that's the reason that they never won an Apple Cup, yada, yada, yada. If he gets to Mississippi State and Alabama comes calling and he looks at Mississippi State's players versus Alabama and somebody asks him a question in a post-game press conference and he says, well, look at my players versus their players. Do you think that's going to go over in the South the same way it was kind of let go by the Washington media?
No, buddy, because it's been proven that you can win games at Mississippi State. So you don't get excuses. So with that said, Mike Leach, start taking responsibility, even though he won't, because good leadership always takes responsibility when bad things happen. Now, here is the challenge for all Pac-12 Apostles listeners. I will send you an Unafraid Show t-shirt if you can get the answer to this correct. Which assistant, there's two answers to this. Which assistant, current assistant, and which past assistant, no longer coaching, have been at the most Pac-12 schools? And the reason why we bring that up is because Arizona hired Greg Burns. Greg Burns has been at a number of Pac-12 schools. We're not going to name them all intentionally. But which assistants, the challenge question, which assistants have been at the most Pac-12 schools, current and former? Send that to imad@unafraidshow.com with the list of the schools and the years, and you got it, buddy. And you got it. T-shirt coming in the mail.
You got to think, once the record is established, that Dante Williams he's in the middle of chasing it down right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, Dante Williams is hunting it down. Dude, he is attempting to be the first coach to touch his toes, get a check from every single Pac-12 school in the conference.
See,
he might do it too.
We're roasting him, and actually two of the schools that he's been at in the last 6 years weren't even Pac-12 schools. They were San Jose State and the 1 year he did at Nebraska. But I think he could do it. If he keeps it up, he could catch them all, treating these Pac-12 schools like Pokemon.
dude, he's playing Pac-12 bingo is what he's playing. But what do you think about this Greg Burns hire by Arizona?
I mean, they need somebody with California connections. They are woefully disconnected from California area recruiting. I think that they're hoping that Paul Rhodes as the defensive coordinator is going to help with that a little bit. Greg Burns has been around incredibly, incredibly talented players in his, tenure as a football coach, including Troy Polamalu. He was there for the two national championships in 2003 and 2004. It is interesting to me that he has sort of bounced around recently and hasn't had an opportunity to kind of put down roots. I think he was at USC last year. He was at Washington State the year before that. He did a little tiny stint in the NFL. Not Washington State, but Oregon State. And the longest he really was anywhere was he did four seasons, I believe, at ASU back at the turn of the decade from 08 to 11, and then three seasons at Cal. And so, you know, the longest he's really ever been anywhere was when he was in school at Washington State. So this is, you know, you never really know what somebody is capable of if they're always bouncing around. Then what you're looking for is immediate improvement, right? And for immediate results in recruiting, Kevin Sumlin can't be going into this season thinking that he's got 5 years left at U of A. He's got to go in saying that, like, if we don't make an impact in the 2020 season, there's a pretty good chance that this is going to be his last season there. So this is a pretty big need.
Ooh, well, see, but even check this out though. Here's the thing that people aren't necessarily realizing either, is the fact that this is that the revenue being down from March Madness missing, college football, college baseball World Series, TV money, softball money, all of that stuff, because those are events that do make money for the NCAA as well. It's not as much as March Madness and the college football, obviously, but these are opportunities that schools are missing out on money as well. So will that then affect Arizona if Sumlin has another bad year? Schools might be willing to give coaches a longer leash because they're like, ooh, we can't take this buyout hit and then hire another coach, especially in the Pac-12 where money's already short compared to the other conferences.
It's a great point because there's a real possibility that there's some basketball coaches whose jobs might have been saved by everything just coming to a screeching halt. You know, I very often wonder where USC is at on basically the entire staff of every single sport out there. I think needs to be kind of on edge because, you know, you bring in a new athletic director and you have to prove your worth to that person, you know, and so, you know, USC men's basketball has sort of been in flux, you know, and it makes you wonder if Andy Enfield just finishing his seventh season, you know, but not really getting a chance to make a run in the Pac-12 tournament or anything like that. You wonder if this could save his job. You know, I hadn't heard that he was on the hot seat or anything like that, but it could affect more than just football. In that, you know, if the finances aren't there to be able to make a change, if you're at UCLA or if you're at University of Arizona, when you would probably, you know, maybe be considering it if things continued to go in the direction that they have been headed the last couple of years, maybe you have to eat an extra season just because of the financial situation that this has put everybody into. And those are the kind of problems that you run into when the salaries are a massive bubble in the way that they, you know, in the way that they have been. You still have to meet these financial obligations if you're the schools. And if you don't have that income, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, you will have to pay them out some way. And yeah, so you might be absolutely right about that. We might stem the tide of massive coaching turnover just through events like we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it's definitely possible because the money matters. And if the money does not, I mean, like, there's no way that people can act like it doesn't, because it does. That's part of the reason why Clay Helton is still in business right now at USC. Now, with this coronavirus, though, and time being used up, taken, all of this, right? Like, you, I should say, having additional time to spend with your family, additional, all these things. People are turning to entertainment to, you know, to have some fun, to enjoy themselves. Bill Simmons brought up a good question and a good idea, because we still want to see movies. We still want to enjoy the box office content. And really, it can be king right now because there's nothing else. So he brought up an idea. Ralph, will you explain to him the idea?
Yeah, so Bill Simmons said that they should just make every movie that was going to be available in theaters available at home for about for $50, that you can essentially rent the movie for $50. And the response was pretty eye-opening. It was, I mean, it was everybody basically saying, like, that's an idiotic idea. Whoever spends $50 going to a movie, if they make it available, then it would just immediately shift to like illegal download torrent streams and they would cost themselves a bunch of money anyway. But the thing that stuck out to me is there seemed to be a whole lot of single people and or childless people wondering how anybody ever spends $50 at the movie theater. And I'm sitting here wondering how it's possible to spend less than $50 going to a movie, because I have not done that in over 10 years. It is at least $50 to go to a movie.
Dude, if we go to a matinee here, okay, with my family, the cheapest possible movie, it's like a $7, it's like a it's an $8 ticket, I believe. $8 ticket for everybody. $8 times six people, even though that there are seven, there is a baby. So there are six people. That's $48 just in tickets for the cheapest movie possible, which is really only in weekdays. So it's got to be a kid out of school, something. I mean, like a day out of school, something. So that's $48 already. That is before, because I may sometimes, if I'm not all by myself, I'm a concession in my backpack bringer. So I'm bringing my own water. I'm bringing my own, all of this stuff. So I'd say that for everybody bringing it, that costs me $10, right? At the movie theater, that's going to be like a $45 purchase for popcorn, for two bags of popcorn. Cause I need, with six people, if we haven't eaten already, I need two bags of popcorn with the refill. So now we have four bags of popcorn to split between six people. and drinks for everybody. Dude, this is like a $45 trip. Plus, if a family member didn't keep the baby, now we got to pay for a babysitter. Dude, just to take a family to the movies, this could be a $200 night. This is like a night at Ruth's Chris for me and the wife. Just to spend an hour and 45 minutes watching a movie that we may or may not like. This is part of the reason why I like going to the movies all by myself, Ralph. So yes, I would pay $50 for a movie in the theater happily. And even if I could only watch it through one time, like they used to do with the iTunes movies where you could rent them for 24 hours, I would rent the hell out of that sucker, buddy. I'd rent that thing $50. Sit your little ass down over here and watch the movie. We ain't getting up. You better not pull out your damn cell phone either. We getting all the enjoyment out of here.
Right. Man, we pay a sitter. We pay our babysitter about $15 an hour. We got four kids. So I feel like some people feel like that's a lot. And I'm like, well, you get what you pay for, and it's not that much. It's, you know, less than $4 an hour per kid. And so, you know, if we leave the house to go to a movie, we're going to be gone at least 4 hours, right? Because we're probably going to grab a meal. So that's $60, and we haven't even bought our movie tickets yet. We have not even purchased our movie tickets yet. And then if you throw dinner in there, dinner's probably going to be $50 by itself. Movies, $25. If you have snacks there, you know, even more. I'm $50 for a movie. You are damn right. I would pay $50 to be able to watch a movie in the comfort of my own living room. You know, I would absolutely.
Then I can pause it when I gotta go pee.
Yep. And so and then you could turn around and invite over the neighbors or whatever. You could, you know, but at the same time, that would be that $50, that'd be going straight to the studio, right? So it would be interesting to see, even if they tested it out, you know, if we're all going to be locked
up. Oh, and then that's actually cutting out the middleman. That's actually cutting out the middleman, which actually may make them make more money. without having to pay the theaters. Because who knows how much the theaters are actually paying for the movies?
I've heard that the ticket basically goes straight to and that's why your snacks are so expensive, because the snacks are actually what keep the movie theaters running.
Okay.
I think all movie theaters all across America, because I think the theater experience is still, I love it. I try to go to a movie, you know, once every couple of weeks by myself, just to kind of, you know, get a little break from, cause I'm around my kids all the time because, you know, I homeschool a couple of them or whatever. And so, that's a nice little refresher for me. I think that movie theaters all across the country should be playing like cult classics. Like I would love to go to a theater and be able to pay $5 just to see Dumb and Dumber on the big screen. You know, I think that they should be playing stuff, that just are kind of cultural favorites, in addition to new releases. I think that, you know, and then they should make more new releases available just to stream in your house for an elevated fee, because, and I know that that's kind of the direction that we're moving already, but I'd hate to see movie theaters just shutter and close, because of the direction that our society is headed. But I still would love the opportunity to go and watch some sports movies, right? Like, The Air Up There and stuff like that on the big screen. I think that'd be a lot of fun. You know, I know that movie theaters already do the thing where you can like go to watch the UFC fight with people and stuff like that. But even like classic games, if I could go and rewatch the 92-93 NBA Finals between the Suns and Bulls in a movie theater, hell yeah. Like that sounds like a great time to me. But they got to make them more multi-use, because I think less and less people are going to be going to new releases, especially with, you know, it's just going to be ingrained in people's heads not to go out in crowds long past when they lift the whole quarantine order from the CDC.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I 100% agree with that. Now on to the last thing of the day, the fast food draft. You guys can see this. I'm going to put it in the description, and I will put a link to that as well, so you can see it for yourself. And you can send us your bracket, your 64 fast food team bracket, and tell us who you would have winning this this tournament. Because I looked at this, and mind you, I don't eat a lot of these places anymore because I like my life. But
hold on. Where'd you get this from? Because you sent me this ultimate fast food and fast casual restaurant bracket. Where did you find this?
I don't remember. There's so much stuff. I'm on the internet all day every day. Like
you are very online.
Dude, so I'm trying this whole new work day, buffer day, free day thing, right?
Okay.
And on free days, you're not allowed to do anything. Think about work, write an idea down, anything. It's a free day. And so on free days, I'm like, my wife is like, George, it's a free day for you. Why are you on Twitter? I'm like, I want to know what's going on.
You don't want to be left out.
Yeah. So and I'm like, I need to know, because tomorrow's a buffer day or tomorrow's a work day and I'm going to be all done. Well, actually, it'd be a buffer day before a work day. So at least I can catch up on a buffer day. But dude, not getting on Twitter on a free day is just like murder to me, dude. I'm just like, I feel like I'm just.
You're out here printing tweets out to be able to read on your free day.
Exactly. Exactly. I forgot where I got it, but. Okay, so it's a 16-team bracket. I will put it out so everybody have. So we can go through all the games super, super, super quick. But the one seeds are McDonald's, Five Guys, Wendy's, and Chick-fil-A. Two seeds are Burger King, Taco Bell, In-N-Out, and Chipotle. So and it goes down all the way to 16s that are like Joe Belie, Penn Station, Roy Rogers, and Wiener Schnitzel. So that's the way it goes. And I don't like some of these matchups, but whatever. But this bracket is really cool because it's just like the NCAA tournament where you, like me, have no idea where Jubilee is. But I didn't know where, the first time I saw Iona, you know, maybe 10 years ago, I had to look up where that was. So very appropriate. So, Ralph, in your first game, McDonald's versus Jubilee, who do you have?
Well, I mean, McDonald's is like the Kentucky of this bracket, right? Like they're the giant. They're always going to be there. I don't know. Jollibee? I honestly, we don't have that in Arizona. We got everything in Arizona, and I don't know what that is. And so I got to advance McDonald's.
Me too. This was an easy 16s don't lose to one seeds, except Virginia. And so that didn't happen this year. So it ain't happening in this bracket. And you're definitely not knocking off McDonald's in the first bracket. So I guess we'll just go kind of a bracket at a time all the way down to the final eight. And then we can go from there. Wawa versus Sheetz for the 8-9 matchup to play McDonald's.
I don't even know what Sheetz is. I have no idea. So I just have to go off brand recognition. And I got to go with Wawa, which is that my only knowledge of Wawa is people who live east of me in the United States arguing over whether or not that's like a gas station or a sandwich shop, I think is the pretty common argument that I see. And so those are always entertaining for me, even though I don't know what anybody's talking about. So I'm going to go with Wawa.
Oh, I didn't realize what it was until you just said that. Dude, gas station food is completely out. I was going to advance Wawa just because they were the higher seed at 8, but hell no. I don't eat stuff from gas stations. Damn that. So so I got Sheetz moving on. And then for the 4-13, Whataburger versus Quiznos. I got Whataburger. Easy. In a route.
This is my first major upset. Whataburger, from my childhood, Whataburger used to donate $50 every time the Suns hit a 3-pointer. And so in my head as a kid, I'm like, oh man, Whataburger, they're like the best human beings on the planet.
And they have the best Twitter.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, this is pre any of that. So I just built up Whataburger in my head for the longest time, right? Like, oh, I bet it's like the best food in the world because they give away all this money and they sponsor the Suns and I love the Suns. And the first time I ate there, I was like, man, what the hell? Like, this is just a messy burger. And so, but Quiznos definitely got me through college.
When is the last time that you had Quiznos? If you walk by a Quiznos, are you like, oh my God, I got to go to Quiznos?
Well, first of all, I definitely burned myself out on Quiznos. And then everybody started toasting subs, and so it wasn't that unique. But I burned myself out on Quiznos, and I noticed when I stopped eating there, I started watching them close, and I was like, damn, was I keeping the whole place in business by myself? But I will say I think Whataburger's overrated. I'm not afraid of all the people from Texas to jump into my mentions. I don't even see In-N-Out on here, so we can't have the Whataburger versus
No,
In-N-Out.
It's the 2-seed in the bag fries region.
Oh, then yeah, I didn't have them going that far anyway. But I'm just not a big burger fan, and you'll notice that when we get down to the final four. So I got to go with Quiznos here in big upset.
Oh God, they have chicken at Whataburger too, man. What's wrong with you? Panda Express or Potbelly?
Do anything over Panda Express.
Dude, I've only seen Potbelly's, never had a Potbelly sandwich, so I'm going with Panda. Okay. I'm going with Panda Express, even though I can't have them advancing very far because their rice gives me gas, so I don't even eat there. It gives me bad gas.
All I know is I like Panda Express slightly less than former 5-star cornerback Jack Jones. Shout out to Jack Jones.
Who do you have in the 6-11 matchup, Carl's Jr. or Dairy Queen?
Dairy Queen I you know what? I grew, we had Hardee's and Carl's Jr. Cause I used to live.
How do you have Hardee's and Carl's Jr. in the same place? They're like the same place.
No. So I used to live in Wyoming and Arizona at the same time. I go to school in Arizona. And then the first day that summer would start, I'd be on a plane to Wyoming. I'd spend the whole summer with my grandparents. And that was age 4 all the way through 18. Then when I was 19, I moved to Wyoming and I was there for 3 years. And so I always had Carl's Jr. and I always had Hardee's, and they both did, like, Carl's Jr. great for burgers, Hardee's great, like, elite chicken sandwich. But
yes,
but Dairy Queen, underrated French fries, plus they have the Blizzard. This is a rough first round matchup. I do not respect that these two have to go head to head in the first round, but I'm making the Blizzard the buzzer beater here, and I'm going with Dairy Queen. Even though I very much like and respect the Carl's Jr., especially pre, like, Paris Hilton, Jessica Simpson in a bikini Carl's Jr., because they the thing about Carl's Jr. is they make the burgers look so ridiculous on TV. Like, they had to, like, really sex everything up, right? So they had to make the burgers, they're, like, making women a piece of meat, and then they had to make the burgers, like, absurdly gorgeous in these commercials. And as of right now, today in America, there is no bigger difference between what a burger actually looks like in person and what it looks like in the commercial than going to Carl's Jr. and seeing it looks like somebody stepped on the Carl's Jr. Famous star with their shoes and socks off. Meanwhile, on the commercial, like, it looks like the greatest thing ever invented. So for that reason alone, that's a weakness for me for Carl's Jr. So I got to advance Dairy Queen.
Oh, God. I totally agree with that. You are 100% right. For that same reason, I got Dairy Queen defeating Carl's Jr. And they got Blizzards, bro. And they got Blizzards. The 3 vs. 14, Arby's. We have the Meats versus Taco Cabana, the 14 seed.
I gotta give Arby's some love for the Arby's melts and the beef and cheddars that I used to, you know, hunt for spare change.
Oh, in my the couch God.
To go and you buy in the middle of the day.
Quiznos and Arby's. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, there was an Arby's within walking distance of my house when I was a kid, and you used to be able to get an Arby's melt for $1. And now I feel like everything at Arby's is much more expensive than it used to be. But it was the quickest way to be able to get a meal for $1 when I was a kid, and I respect Arby's for that. So I have Arby's moving on.
There was an Arby's right across from my dorm in college. I didn't eat there one time. Like, I've been to Arby's maybe 3 times in my entire life, and every time I was like, why did I come here? So you know who's winning. Taco Cabana is winning this just off of a dude. This is one of those blowouts where you thought that Arby's, because they have a big name, that they were going to win, and then this is like a Michigan State loss is what it is in the first round. Next matchup, 7 vs. 10, Panera Bread versus Jersey Mike's. Who you got?
Jersey. I'm new to Jersey Mike's. My wife loves it. The number 42 there is excellent. Shout out to Pat Tillman. Anytime you get to walk into a restaurant and say 42, respect to the GOAT. But this is Panera. In a stunning blowout win, just because of the variety, and we're in coronavirus season, and they got the soups, they got the comfort food desserts, they got the fresh smell of bread when you walk in the door. They bring it, and you can get the soup and salad, the half and half. There's too much going on at Panera. They've really got it working, especially for a tournament like this. Variety is going to be huge, and so blowout win for Panera.
Yeah. I was going to go with Jersey Mike's just because I just think this is a tough, tough matchup. But you put me over the edge because Panera has more healthy food. They have different options. Yeah. So I'm going with Panera Bread here. I like it. I like Panera Bread for the win right there. Ah, that was a good call. That was great rationale. The 2 versus 15 matchup. Chipotle versus AGW. Oh, no, no. A&W, not AGW.
Yeah, hate this. This is the first real matchup that pisses me off the most.
Are you serious?
Yeah, A&W has the best cheese curds of any fast food restaurant. Culver's is garbage, by the way. A&W has the root beer floats. They have just the A&W root beer, which is good by itself.
No, it's not. Root beer sucks.
See, now you're arguing against the marketplace. The marketplace loves root beer. But at the same time, Chipotle is, they're kind of like In-N-Out, where they do like 4 things. They do them incredibly well. They're an absolute giant right now. I had Chipotle yesterday, and the world seems to be fine with less and less A&Ws all over the place. There used to be a lot more than there is now. So I got to go with Chipotle, but A&W should be higher than a 15 seed. I think they got screwed with this seeding.
Okay. So what ultimately out of that is the final out of this Mac and Dick McDonald region, the final 2 teams out of this region for you?
The final 2 teams out of this region, I think McDonald's is the 1 seed, right?
Yep.
And so I have them moving on to face Panera.
Wow. That's very interesting. Me on the other hand, this was so tough for me because it was between, for me moving on, it became that second round matchup between Panera Bread and Chipotle. I don't really eat Chipotle anymore, but because they've had like food scares. Yep. So I got Panera Bread because there have been multiple Chipotle, like Ebola out, E. coli outbreaks and all this stuff. And once you start having food issues, you are susceptible to losses. I got Whataburger versus Panera Bread in the final for this region.
Man, Whataburger taking down McDonald's.
Oh yeah. Yep. In the next region, 1 versus 16 matchup, Chick-fil-A versus Penn Station. I got Chick-fil-A this is a 100-point victory.
Oh yeah, the Chick-fil-A had its walk-ons in for the final 10 minutes of this. This is one of those 100 to 40 opening round games.
Yeah, Moe's versus Jimmy John's, 8 versus 9.
I'm gonna go with Jimmy John's. They're number 9, the Italian. I mean, I Jimmy John's is funny in that you go in and like as soon as you order it, they hand you the sandwich, like hit you right upside the head with it. And so that's another restaurant that I'm burned out on. But I will say that I have had it quite a bit. And they've got the Turkey Tom and the number 9 are 2 very solid sandwiches. And so they'll get the opening round win.
No way, Jose. Welcome to Moe's. wins this because for the main reason, Jimmy John's does not have, the reason why I've never eaten at Jimmy John's because they don't have hot subs. You don't have hot subs. You are not a real sub place.
It's also a little weird walking into a Jimmy John's and they decorate the restaurant with tubs of mayonnaise.
Yeah. Like
that's their decoration. That has always been the weirdest thing to me.
Yep. So they get upset in the first round. Next up, you got the 4 versus 13. Culver's versus Boston Market. This is a beatdown right here. This is a beatdown. Boston Market beats down Culver's because Culver's is one of the most overrated restaurant fast food places that there is. I went to one the first time when we were playing in a tournament in Nebraska in a baseball tournament that my son had. I was hoping it was going to be like Long John Silver or something. It was so weak. Bad food, cheese curds, terrible. Everything there was below average. So Boston Market just by default wins this one.
Yeah, Culver's sucks. It's terrible. This is like when Oakland won their conference tournament and they were like 12-19 on the season.
Yeah.
They don't even belong in here. Maybe there's some people from the Midwest that'll get upset, but this is the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. If you're listening to the Pac-12 Apostles podcast with the expectation that the people that run it are going to say nice things about Culver's, it's not your day. You have to find another show.
Not your day.
Yeah,
all right.
Culver sucks. I don't even care who they're playing.
Like, yep, Culver's exactly. 5 versus 12. Domino's versus Torchy's Tacos.
I'll give a shout out to Domino's. Domino's is like that had like a scholarship penalty. They're like USC. Like that when they came out and made that commercial, they're like, hey, we know that we actually suck now. They reformatted everything and it's still not good food. But I do respect a restaurant that comes out and says like, hey, we were really bad and we're trying to do better. And Domino's was Friday night for me as a kid. That was a, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, and the one time that we could eat out every week was ordering Domino's on a Friday night. And so, I mean, I always look forward to those Friday nights, and I grew up to realize it's not good pizza at all, but they acknowledged it. And so point to Domino's.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you there. And Domino's thin crust pizza is really good because I like pizza cut in squares. I'm partial to pizza cut in squares. I don't know why, but I do like that one. And they do have the hand tossed crust. There are some options there that they have improved. So Domino's comes out with the victory there. Number 6 versus 11, White Castle / Crystals. I'm giving Crystals and White Castle a / just like Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Versus Little Caesars, Hot and Ready, number 11.
This is Little Caesars for me. I'm not from Arizona. Just got its first White Castle. The only White Castle I've ever had has been the frozen from the box.
It's not the same. It is not the
same. Yeah, so I get that there's a lot of people who are big fans of White Castle, but you got to understand Little Caesars is it's hot and it's ready. So and that's those are two things that I need from my fast food is for it to be not just warm, but hot, and also for it to be ready. Those two things are so important. And so Little Caesars for the win.
I got White Castle here. I mean, I can tear down like 12 White Castles at once, dude, or Crystals. I actually like Crystals better than White Castle, but whatever. 3 versus 14, Subway versus Church's Chicken.
This is like the Patino thing. Like, are we still holding Subway responsible for introducing Jared Fogle to the world and making him famous?
Oh, no, no.
All right. Okay. So that no more sanctions on Subway.
No.
The Italian BMT with Chipotle Southwest dressing at Subway on Italian herbs and cheese bread is the only thing that I've ever eaten from there. It is the only thing that I would eat from there because Subway just smells like, I can't remember. I did not invent this. Someone else did, but Subway smells like a loaf of bread took a dump. But that sandwich, that is an elite sandwich. So Church's can be good. It's not good where I'm at. The Church's in Arizona aren't that good. There's one in Wyoming I used to go to that was pretty good, but Subway $5 footlongs or the combo for $6.25 on Thursday nights or whatever. I'm all about that, so I'll go with Subway.
Dude, this is a game that would have been like San Diego State versus Loyola Chicago that you don't turn on until you find out that it's 10 seconds left and somebody's down by 1 point. Like you don't even watch this game because this is like this bracket should be called the nitrates and steroids game. Like the nitrates, steroids, and everything else wrong with this game. I don't even really care who wins this game, but I pick churches just because when I was younger, it reminds me of my grandma.
Well, and Subway also, it's kind of nice to have them in a bracket like this because just like all college basketball teams, they're lying about the height. It's off by about an inch. So the footlongs are actually 11 inches. So in the spirit of basketball, where everybody's an inch shorter than they're actually listed as, I got to give Subway some respect.
Seven Papa John's versus 10 Cookout. Hold on. First, I still have sanctions against Papa John's. As a black man, I have sanctions against Papa John's. My kids about a year ago or so asked me, like, Dad, let's get some pizza. Okay, where do you want to get it from? Let's get it from Papa John's. I was like, slow down, son. We don't eat at Papa John's. But now that Papa John is actually gone, I don't want to give him any money. He still owns part of the company. And granted, they've ousted him from the board. Shaq is back the face of it. So I like Shaq.
So you have John, you're really gonna, I mean, it's still his company, right? It's still named after him. John Schnatter was permanently disinvited from the Cookout, and you're gonna choose his former restaurant over a restaurant called Cookout. I don't think you can do it.
Wait, hold up. He owned that too?
No. What I'm saying is what John Schnatter said on that conference call got him disinvited from the Cookout.
Oh, yeah.
So
damn.
I'm not sure if you can go and choose Papa John's over a restaurant called Cookout.
Okay. All right. Only because of Shaq. Papa John's.
I'm going to go with Cookout. I'm going to go with Cookout. God.
Hell no, Ralph. I'm going Cookout.
Yeah. Handmade milkshakes.
Yes.
Handmade milkshakes over. I ate a lot of Papa John's when I was. Let's see.
I didn't know they had handmade milkshakes, Ralph. If you had told me that, there would have been no question.
It's like a fast food mixed with a Denny's.
Okay. So number two, Burger King versus number 15, Sbarro. I got a huge upset here. Sbarro never lets you down. It's hot. It's not always ready, but it is always hot. When you get it, and Burger King has fallen so far down the rankings, dude. I remember when you used to be able to get a Whopper, thick piece of meat, cold vegetables. I mean, it made me fall in love with burgers, and now it's just not the same. So, sorry, Sbarro wins.
Burger King has two of my favorite fast food things that I've ever had. It's also just, it's not good. Burger King's never really been good, but the weird shaped chicken sandwich that tasted like, it tasted like a chicken sandwich you get at elementary school. That chicken sandwich, loved it. It that weird taste does not go with adulthood. So if you show up trying to get that chicken sandwich now, you'll quickly be reminded why it was probably better when you were a kid than it is now. And then for a while they had this big chicken sandwich, is like a bacon and cheddar thing. It was awesome. And so for getting me through some of my adolescence, I'll give the nod to Burger King here. Sbarro falls victim to being mall food, and malls are all dying in 2020. This is the coronavirus thing is probably the kill shot that'll take out some of the malls that are barely hanging on. So kudos to Sbarro for even making the tournament, but they're about to go on a several year dry run after this.
Okay. So who's your final in this No Sundays region?
Chick-fil-A and Little Caesars. Little Caesars, do yourself a favor, go out to Little Caesars, avoid crowds, of course, go out to Little Caesars, get their thin crust. It's like $6 and no food has ever been more worth $6 than a Little Caesars hot and ready thin crust. But yeah, and then Chick-fil-A is just dominant, completely dominant. So they're meeting Little Caesars in the Elite Eight.
Dude, I got Chick-fil-A and White Castle. That's what I got. Yes, that's what I got coming out of that region. Okay, we got to move quickly through the next region. The Bag and Fries region, 16 versus 1, Five Guys. I got Five Guys. Love Five Guys.
As long as I got money in my pocket to pay for Five Guys, because it's the most expensive restaurant on earth, then it's going to be Five Guys.
Yeah, oh, Five Guys versus 16, Roy Rogers. 8 versus 9, Portillo's versus Zaxby's.
I am not from the South, so I don't know anything about Zaxby's.
Oh, Zaxby's sauce was amazing.
Yeah. And so, but we do have a lot of people in Arizona are from Chicago. So we have several Portillo's here. The Maxwell Street Dog is the way to go. I'm going to go with Portillo's.
Dude, I hate this matchup. I wish they weren't even in the same region and shouldn't be playing each other. Like, this should be like a 5 versus 2 matchup or so. I mean, like, they shouldn't have to play each other until the finals. But I got Portillo's coming out. Portillo's is amazing. 4 Pizza Hut versus 13 Firehouse Subs.
I don't like Firehouse Subs. My wife always makes me go. She loves it. I don't really like Pizza Hut either. But when my grandfather was around, one of his favorite things to do was take me to the Pizza Hut all-you-can-eat buffet. I do have a lot of respect.
People forget about that.
Yeah, I got a lot of respect for the buffet, especially that dessert pizza that they throw out there.
You're living on nostalgia.
Yep, always.
I got Firehouse coming out of that matchup. Number 5, Bojangles versus Noodles and Company.
Bojangles.
Yeah, dude, I got Bojangles coming out there. Their chicken biscuit. Yeah. In the morning? Oh, it's the only one that can fight with Chick-fil-A. Only one. Love it. Jack in the Box versus PDQ, whatever that is. No idea what PDQ is.
PDQ is like they make a really good chicken sandwich. It's PDQ is pretty good, but Jack in the Box Oreo shake and you can't go wrong there. And then that late night the late taco. Night stoner menu or whatever. I don't partake, but I will.
Soy meat tacos. Those are not real meat. FYI.
My brother, I have seen him drop $25 on tacos.
That'll get you 50 tacos.
Yeah. I've seen him do it. I've seen him. Again, not my thing. Ultimate cheeseburger is not bad, on sourdough.
Mm. I would get the Yumbo Yak Wee Yees on
Yumbo Yak, yes.
Yeah, the Yumbo Yak Wee Yees on sourdough bread with because I don't like the ultimate cheeseburger because I like I'm a vegetables on my burger kind of guy.
Yeah. I got you.
So Jack in the Box wins this for me. Number 3, Popeyes versus 14, which I loved in college, which is underrated, Schlotzky's Deli.
Schlotzky's is great. That is where Schlotzky's is where I first had Louisiana sauce, and I've never not had 3 bottles of it in the fridge since then. So I'm eternally grateful to Schlotzky's for introducing me to Louisiana sauce. But Popeyes has the best player in the tournament. They've got the guy that can go out and score 40.
Who is that?
And the chicken sandwich.
Oh, you damn lie! It's not better than Chick-fil-A's.
I don't matter. It doesn't matter. They're not playing Chick-fil-A. They're playing. True. Schlotzky's, right? So
okay.
So we're going with Popeyes.
Okay. Popeyes for the win. I hate Popeyes service, but I love their food. Their service can overcome like their food can overcome how much I hate their service with the power of 1,000 suns.
You admit it though. You somewhere, this is a big world and there's a lot of people in it. Somewhere out there, somebody at Popeyes, when that whole chicken sandwich craze was going on, was like, F this. And they threw down their apron and they threw down their hat and they went and got themselves a job at Kroger, thinking that life was going to be a little bit more calm for them. And then we run into this pandemic and they're getting their ass kicked again. Someone out there did that. They quit their job at Popeyes to go work at Kroger and and it's their fault. It's just the black cloud is following them wherever they go.
Okay. Wingstop versus Long John Silver. This is a matchup I almost hate as much as Portillo's versus Zaxby's. Because I love Long John Silver, dude. I love Long John Silver. I loved Captain D's when I was young. Like, it's just amazing. It just reminds me so much of my childhood, and I love it. But Wingstop for the win, just because there's not a Long John, because Long John Silver's loses, because they're not, they lose from the Pac-12 problem. They don't have enough availability. They're not available everywhere. So they lose Wingstop.
Long John Silver's is a Pac-12 network restaurant?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I look at it this way. What does Long John Silver's do better than a lot of other people that people don't really know about? And it's their fries. And I think maybe it's just the taste of the fries along with like beer batter fish or whatever. But and then Wingstop has better fries.
Yep.
Right? Like Wingstop's got pretty elite fries and the lemon pepper wings. Wingstop is by far not my favorite place to get wings, but they do kill it with the lemon pepper, and that's my favorite kind. So I got to give Wingstop the win.
Yep. Number two, In-N-Out versus 15, Baja Fresh. Oh, man, I remember those burrito Dos Manos days. But
Dos Manos, listen, yeah.
I'm in Cali. In-N-Out, love it, bro. In-N-Out.
Yeah, animal style fries for the win. I'm not crazy about In-N-Out, but it's never let me down. Like it's always been fine.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big burger person. And to be able to go there and get it without the bread, cause the bread is kind of nice to get a protein style or whatever. But I will say the Baja Fresh Dos Manos, you got to respect it. And then the beans that fall out the back, you use the chips to scoop them up. Baja Fresh deserves respect.
Yep. Okay, who do you have in the final in this region? Because I got Portillo's versus In-N-Out.
I got Five Guys and Popeyes.
Oh, God. Okay. Okay, cool. Now we got one more bracket, the Dave Thomas region. So you know who the number one seed is. Wendy's. You got Wendy's versus 16 Wiener Schnitzel.
Is this... Are they being serious? Because come on now. This is the Kansas versus North Carolina A&T Tech Junior College here. I'm sure that some people eat at Wiener Schnitzel and are very serious about it and have an affinity for it, but Wendy's is dominant.
Dude, I've never in my life been to Wiener Schnitzel's, and fresh, not frozen square patties are where the business is, dude. That's an absolute win for me. Love it. 8 versus 9, Sonic versus Checkers.
Sonic's a really frustrating place because the food's not good. The drinks are usually why people go, and the name implies speed. I know it's a reference to sound, but because of Sonic the Hedgehog, I think you show up at a Sonic and you expect it to be fast. And you can go through a Sonic drive-thru and be there for half an hour, and that's super annoying. Respect to the half-price drinks after 8 p.m. I do like that. But Checkers and Rally's, they put that Frank's hot sauce on their chicken sandwich to make the buffalo chicken sandwich, and that alone is one of the best things that anybody out there makes.
Dude, so Checkers, I gotta go and Rally's Checkers is and Rally's. So overrated and so 1990s. It's so overrated, so 90s.
Well, that's Sonic my headspace is always in the 1990s, so I'm going with it.
Stood the test of time. And in terms
the test
of
like, too much time at the drive-thru waiting for my food.
Yeah, at times, but Sonic is just better. And they used to have in Memphis, they used to have women delivering him on roller skates, so it made it even better. I know we're in trouble for that, but I liked it. Number 4, Shake Shack versus number 13, Swenson's. If you had asked me this a year ago, Swenson's would have won this, even though I'd never been to Swenson's because I'm an In-N-Out guy, so I felt like Shake Shack was completely overrated, but their burgers are small and expensive. However, Shake Shack has completely grown on me. Now that it's here in Cali, I'd rather enjoy Shake Shack. I think it's actually quite fantastic. Yeah, so they defeat Swenson's.
I have to defer to the experts on here because I have never had either one. But a couple of the guys that I work with down here in Arizona swear by Shake Shack. My wife loves Shake Shack. You just gave them the nod, so I'm gonna go with the popular mindset here and say Shake Shack moves on.
Okay, number five, Steak and Shake versus 12 Wings Over that I've never been to. So I got Steak and Shake, which I but they have shakes, hand dipped shakes.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I don't know what Wings Over is.
Yeah, no idea. Number six, Raising Cane's versus Del Taco.
There's not very many good Mexican food restaurants on this. And I guess a lot of the really good Mexican food restaurants aren't necessarily like fast food, but I think they fit in the fast casual. They should have done like any restaurant that ends in Bertos would be good for this category. So, and Del Taco is like not, I don't know. They do those cheap fried shrimp tacos. Those are okay. But I just don't see how Del Taco can compete here.
Yeah, I agree. I was trying to. I love Mexican food. Was trying to show it love, but right now it just is not the business, dude. Raising Cane's just crushed Del Taco in this. 3 versus 14, KFC versus Blimpie.
I have not eaten at either one in 10+ years. Blimpie's
are they even in business still?
Again, I haven't seen one in such a long time. I had a go-to there. I think it was like a buffalo chicken sub. But if push came to shove, I'm going to go get biscuits from KFC and put some honey on them. And I mean,
honey sauce. It's not even real honey. That's another
reason. Yeah. I mean, KFC is disgusting, dude. It's just
fan. The idea of KFC is, but their 11 herbs and spices is amazing. I found a home recipe for it, which is fantastic, by the way.
But if it's coming from your kitchen, but I just don't go into KFC, and I just don't, again, it's been 10+ years since I've eaten there. And I think the last time I was there, I just had their fake mashed potatoes and some biscuits. So I'll give them the win. Because the biscuits are legendary. I mean, they're not enough to make me go to just get them by themselves. But
Red Lobster biscuits, though.
No, Cheddar Bay, good Lord.
Or Chick-fil-A or Bojangles.
Right. But this is the matchup, so I got to go KFC, yeah. I guess.
7 versus 10. Skyline Chili, which I have no idea where that is. There's a lot of Skylines out there in the world. A lot of high schools named Skyline. And 10, Qdobo. Qdobo is freaking unbelievable, dude. It is like, welcome to Moe's. Better. Qdobo is, I love Qdobo, by the way. Their nachos are fantastic. They give you, never mind. I love Qdobo.
You call it Qdobo?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start pronouncing it like that. I
just looked. It doesn't say that at all.
No, but that's what it is now. It's Qdobo now. They don't get a choice. I remember Chipotle tried to introduce queso and it tastes like, vomit. It's terrible.
I was like, but who were your tasters that thought that this was queso?
Dude, how do you ruin melted cheese? How do you, right? So, and Chipotle, like, they had like a flawless, spotless record before then. And they tried to like put Qdoba out of business by also having queso. And they screwed it up. Qdoba made Chipotle take the biggest L of all time by forcing them into the queso game. So I got to give Qdoba the win here.
Yeah. Taco Bell versus El Pollo Loco.
this isn't even a contest for me. Like Taco Bell, I do this thing where every time Taco Bell introduces a new menu item, I try it, right? I don't eat at Taco Bell for any other reason. But whenever they put a bunch of TV money into some wacky new thing like nacho fries, I'll go that one time and I'll have them and it's fine. El Pollo Loco, that's my restaurant, man. You can go so many different directions there. You can get just some chicken, or you can go with a burrito. That salsa bar is good. To me, El Pollo Loco is one of my absolute favorite places. And so I got to go with El Pollo Loco.
I don't love El Pollo Loco, but Taco Bell's falling off the map. They're just gross at times now. And then they also had the problem with their food. When you start having like major national issues with your food, I gotta be out. So El Pollo Loco for the win there.
Their cardboard beef.
Yeah. Dude, like, come on. So who do you have coming in your final from the Dave Thomas region?
Believe it or not. I mean, I wasn't just giving El Pollo Loco praise for no reason. I have them going all the way to the Elite Eight against Wendy's.
Are you kidding me?
No. I love El Pollo Loco.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so in my Elite Eight, I have Qdoba versus Shake Shack.
Okay. Wendy's gets knocked out. What?
Wendy's got knocked out by Shake Shack.
Okay.
Because Shake Shack has milkshakes and that are better than the Frosty.
All right.
Even though they do have a vanilla Frosty, which was much needed for a long time. So my Elite Eight are Whataburger, Panera Bread, Whataburger versus Panera Bread, Chick-fil-A versus White Castle, Portillo's versus In-N-Out, Shake Shack versus Qdoba. Who do you have in your who are your Elite Eight?
McDonald's, for the fact that like I could do the like deadbeat dad thing and go out for a pack of cigarettes and just not come home. But if I came home 2 years later after being out of my kids' lives for 2 years with a bag of McDonald's, they would forgive me. I don't know why McDonald's has that effect on kids, but like my kids love that place. I could care less, but children freaking love the Golden Arches. So I have them against Panera, which is a pretty strong matchup. And then I've got Chick-fil-A and Little Caesars, Hot and Ready versus My Pleasure, Five Guys and Popeyes, and then Wendy's against El Pollo Loco.
Okay. And then who do you have reaching the final four and then your final matchup?
I got Panera knocking out McDonald's, just for the variety. Chick-fil-A taking down Little Caesars. I have Popeyes knocking off Five Guys. Cause like I said, Popeyes has got the star player right now. And then as much as I love El Pollo Loco, I just think Wendy's is too strong a brand and they get through. So I got Panera against Chick-fil-A and Popeyes against Wendy's in my final four.
See, so I kind of went to the next matchup because I feel like Wendy's should have taken down Shake Shack in mine, but I felt like it was only right to have an East Coast, West Coast final four, where you have In-N-Out versus Shake Shack, because that's going to create a lot of controversy. So, I mean, people are going to be all in watching that game. And Portillo's just doesn't have the strength that they had a great run. Cinderella made it to the Elite Eight, but it's over once you run into In-N-Out.
Big city, George. You got New York against L.A. and knocking out Chicago.
Yep. And then Shake Shack knocked out Wendy's. And you had the heavyweight. Chick-fil-A just stomping a hole in White Castle, even though White Castle has chicken and Chick-fil-A has no burgers, but Chick-fil-A has great salad. Their salads are phenomenal. That mac and cheese is not bad for, I mean, it's actually great for fast casual mac and cheese. It's they're went the lemonade, the milkshakes. They even have seasonal items. Anyways, I digress.
Plus, they're nice to you. My wife calls it my wife calls it emotional prostitution when I'll go to a restaurant just because somebody is nice to me. Like, I go get coffee from Dutch Bros just so some 19-year-old will pretend to be interested in what I've got going on in my day. But I mean, that's a good five. I mean, if I'm going to spend $5, you know, might as well come with a smile. So I don't care if it's emotional prostitution.
Yep, and I got Panera Bread. Wait, yeah, I got Panera Bread versus Chick-fil-A in the semifinal.
So that was, so we got the same matchup on one side.
Panera versus Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
and then I got In-N-Out versus Shake Shack, and in my final I have Chick-fil-A versus In-N-Out because Shake Shack is not to the place where it can overtake In-N-Out yet.
Ah, see, but this semifinal was played on a Sunday, so I have Panera taking out Chick-fil-A. Oh! And
no,
and
it can't be. It's always played on Saturday. Championship game on Monday.
Well, I just, you know, where are you going to go? Where's Chick-fil-A going to go to celebrate their victory, George? Probably Panera. So I have Panera beating Chick-fil-A, just because the best ability is availability. And, I have Panera taking down Popeyes in the final.
What? Dude, Chick-fil-A is the champion in mind. Chick-fil-A just puts a, because you literally have, think about this. You have a place that only does chicken versus a place that only does burgers in the final. And the chicken wins. The chicken sandwich, I mean, because they got so much versatility. They got shakes better than In-N-Outs. They have fries better than In-N-Outs because they got waffle fries. They have fresh lemonade versus In-N-Outs pink lemonade. Dude, it's just a wipeout.
Yeah, but at Panera, you go in there for breakfast, you can get yourself a steak and brie sandwich, so you can fancy it up. Like you, and you could slum it with a Southwest chicken salad. You're not going to get bad food at Panera. You're not going to have a bad experience. You're not going to worry about if you're upsetting social justice warriors. You're not going to worry about if you're only being influenced by the current trends. Because I don't think I had gone to Popeyes a single time in the 2 years leading up to 2019. And in 2019, I went probably 50 times.
I don't fool with Popeyes to that level because their service sucks and because Jerry Rice is out there with a chicken on his face mask. It's just, as a black man, it's just weird.
Well, I just think Panera, they'll give you that chocolate chip cookie at the cash register. They got sodas, they got teas. You could just go there to use it as a bakery if you want to. And then sometimes you just need a nice grilled cheese sandwich and a tomato soup, and they, no one else can deliver that. Nobody on this list.
Yeah, I agree with you put up a good fight, Ralph. But you guys, whoever liked this, remember it is up. Send us your bracket. See who won. It will be up along with the podcast as well. Thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time, appreciate your energy. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Peace out. Catch you guys later. Send us an email. I'm Matt@unafraidshow.com. Read your tone on Twitter @GeorgeReister @RalphAmsden. Peace out. Catch you guys later.